This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 914, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
If you wanna make a move, then you better come in. It's just ability, that reason that we're so thin. Living and dying and the stories that are true. Secret to a collapse, knowing when you're through.
Black coat, white shoes, black hair, Cadillac, yeah. The boys are time bomb.
My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host in age, Josh Flanagan.
We are very similar in age, but you are close to a, not really a year younger than me, but near enough as, and I resent it.
7 months?
Okay.
7 months. A little over half a year, let's be fair.
Yeah.
That's fine. We were just talking about our ages right before the show started. No, sir.
It's funny because, like, as I talk to other people, like, if you're, like, in your 50s or whatever, I think I'm about the same age. But my friends, like, I still pay attention to, like there's a little part of the young me that is, like, I'm older than you, you know? Like, it's a thing, you know? Like, when you were 10, like, yeah. If you were 10 and they were 9, it was a big win. Right. And there's a little of that left in me. And it doesn't, I don't apply it fairly.
I understand.
That's my point.
Hey, this is a Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 914. Josh is back. He was gone last week. You were gone last week, right? That's a thing.
I was on the show. I just, for the first time in my life, I had nothing to say.
Just no opinions, which is fair. It was a very light week last week.
It was.
As opposed to this week.
It's true.
I think if you combine the number of books I read the previous 2 weeks, it was less than this week for me.
It was
a big week.
Such a light week that I am not behind.
Oh, there you go.
On my reading.
Which is good because every week one of us picks the book they like the best from their stack of comics. We call that book the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books in the week, the patron pick, the listener mail. The fun is had by all. And in just talking to you, my iPad has dropped 5% in power. This is not good. iPad's on its last legs.
My wife feels the same way talking to me.
Here's your spoiler warning. Exercise some caution. Josh with the pick. And Josh, we were talking before. You know, we like to tell behind the scenes stories. So we were talking, you know, earlier this week, and you're like, I'm pretty sure the picks. Well, you're always coked to the gills. Come on,
sure.
The pick of the week is going to probably be Fantastic Four, and I hadn't read my Marvel books at that point yet. Mm-hmm. And so I was reading my books, and I save Fantastic Four for last. I often do because it's, you know, one of the most anticipated books of the week,
right?
And I was about halfway through it, and I was like, "Fuck, this is good." And I finished it, and I was like, "It's one of the best comics. It's definitely Marvel's best comic. This particular issue was one of the best ones that Ryan North has done." Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that Indiana Jones was teased on the cover and not in the issue, there's a guy in a fedora.
I didn't see that. That's awesome.
But I thought this was one of the best Ryan North issues. He does. He's a master at single issue stories. And if people aren't reading this, shame on them.
I keep going in and I keep thinking, well, these can't all be great. And so maybe this one will just be okay. And I mean, the thing that is fascinating to me is the wealth of ideas and concepts that are brought in so frequently. I feel like Ryan North has had more original thoughts on this than we have seen in 10 years of Fantastic Four comics.
And like, again, I feel like we have to keep saying this, but like the last run was great. The Dan Slott run also was great, but in a different kind of way, different kinds of stories.
They're
And this is a great example of how you can do another great run on the same characters following a great run, but in a different way with new ideas. And it's been really good.
But just the onslaught of really smart and novel concepts at one or two every issue is crazy in a world of deconstructed comics, you know, where one idea will last you 6-8 issues, you know, whatever. And, you know, you really sit with it. But this is an onslaught of fantasy science, but it's also written in such a way that it makes sense. Like it's plausible, you know, certainly within the context, but even sort of outside of it, like the fact that they can time travel is the fantastic thing about it. But the other concepts that are in it are real enough. Is that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And also I would like to point out that this is like many of these, you can totally pick this up and read it. So if you are curious at all, did we say it was Fantastic Four 7-10, also 17, depending on your religious affiliation?
That's a nice lineup.
If you have not read any of Ryan North's Fantastic Four, you can pick this up. And in fact, I encourage you to pick up this one in particular, because this is a great example. And someone, I don't often read the letters columns, but it just caught my eye. The very first letter they put in the column said, called this book a fast-paced Star Trek-flavored science adventure. And I think that's a totally apt description of the book, because it feels very much like the original 60s Star Trek series, in that you have a group of characters going from adventure to adventure. It's different every week, but there's still a through line. And we've had a couple of double issue stories. We've had a couple of two-parters. But for the most part, it's been these sort of in and out adventures. And I didn't feel shortchanged by this issue. I didn't feel like I only got like a 22 page deconstructed story. It was like, it was very meaty. It had a lot going on. When it was over, I was like, that was a very satisfying short story. And again, doing things I have not seen done in not just Fantastic Four comics, but just sort of superhero comics in general. The stuff he does here, I've not seen done before.
Yeah. And in anything. I mean, I'm going to try to explain this, not because you need it, but because I there's a lot that happens.
This story in particular was also very similar, not in a way that I think he ripped it off, but similar concept to a Star Trek Next Generation episode where they find Data's head in the past. But anyway, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we open by seeing the ice, Earth covered in ice. We are 20,000 years ago, give or take. The last glacial maximum. So we're talking about an ice age situation. And we sort of see, and we talk about the people who are coming over the land bridge from Africa, Asia into North America. And these are the people who become the Native Americans and indigenous peoples of the area. Well, that's kind of interesting. Whatever. Yep. We cut to present day in Arizona, where we are reminded that Sue Storm was, in fact, a doctor of archaeology.
I didn't remember that at all.
No. I don't even care if it's true, though. And somebody called her randomly, even though she doesn't practice anymore. But she's got her her Alan Grant boots and her form-fitting cargo pants. And she goes out there. And her Henley. And there is
they're
a skeleton
in Arizona because they've been exiled. That's
true.
A crucial point. They live in Arizona now.
So there is a skeleton that they have unearthed at a construction site. And the thing is that the skeleton is not correct to how long it has been there. I'm trying to remember exactly why, but
yeah, it's European.
It's a European skeleton
from the skull. You know, the different way the skull's formed. It's a European skull, like 20,000 years old than it should be.
So then they think, these are, they notice there's some fabric on there and they're unstable molecules. So they're the Fantastic Four uniforms. Then Sue does a thing. We're 5 pages in. Story hasn't started yet, but it doesn't feel like they rushed through it. I don't know how that's possible. Yeah. Sue does a thing where she turns everybody invisible except for their skeletons. They compare to their own and she finds out that's her own skeleton that has been bashed to shit 20,000 years ago and is buried under there. So back in time they go. I don't know about the scientific merit of having beasts and birds and saber-toothed tigers and mammoths in the same spot, but who cares?
This is an issue where I was like, oh, we need Dr. Ryan Haupt here to give us the science lowdown.
I did think that. We'd never get through this. and then it turns out that, and this is not why it is pick of the week. I want to go ahead and frame that.
It's not why.
It's not why, but that's actually not the thing. So Ramatut shows up. For those of you at home, will know that Ramatut is the earliest incarnation of Nathaniel Richards, as opposed to Immortus, who's the latest incarnation of Nathaniel Richards. You may know him as Kang the Conqueror. And he has different eras, and this first one is very like cartoon villainy.
Mm-hmm. 60s.
And he's a master of time situation, and there's a lot of really cool, like, well, we'll go back in time and fix this gun, except I went back in time before it and took the pin out, and it back and forth and back and forth.
They keep one-upping each other. Well, I went back in time and did this.
And yeah, it's like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Yeah. And then he ends up reducing them both to cinders, and you think, well, how's that going on? So then we go back to 4 years from now in the Baxter Building. They come up with a plan to fool Ramatut, and it is brilliant and fantastic. And they wrap everything up in a very nice bow in that time. And it's a complete story all in its own, science fantasy, science fiction. The thing that got me is that 17 issues into this run, and it feels like both less and more, if that makes sense to you. Like they've come at us in such a rapid pace. They're on time every month. Every one of them is some new story idea. And I guarantee you that there are other longtime comics professionals who were like, this motherfucker is burning through ideas at such a rate.
Slow down, man.
It's crazy. It's like if an athlete had just put his body in the ring, was playing football 8 days a week. You know, I asked him about that. I was like, do you ever think you're going to run out? When I had him on the talk split, which you should go listen to. And he was so nonchalant. He's like, nah, I'll have more ideas. And I promise you, it wasn't smug. And I don't know how to tell you that wasn't smug. It was confident. And it was just but it was more like the idea, there's a lot of ideas out there. And I have many of them.
I think what's most impressive about this issue, of which there's lots of things, is that under a lesser writer, this story would have collapsed under the weight of the twists and turns.
Yes,
because there's so many back and forths over. I'm one upping you. I've got a more intense plan. I've used time this way. They keep Reed and Sue against Kang. Keep going back and forth with each other. And a lesser writer, it would have collapsed. But I think, first of all, it seems to all track. And the way that Ryan North presents it, it's very easy to understand and follow. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the most impressive things about the issue is that in an issue where at one point there's like 50 Kangs attacking Reed because he's going back in time, or Reed and Sue are using the future to win in the past, it all makes sense and it all tracks very well. And it's all very satisfying at the end. I thought that was really impressive.
Like, if you think about the fact that Ryan North comes from Dinosaur Comics, and I always forget that. But for years, for hundreds, maybe, more than 1,000, he had to tell a story and a gag in 6 panels that were always the same.
Right.
And if you think about that, then you look at how the 20-issue comic book is staged. I start to go, okay, I see that. Mm-hmm. Now this probably feels positively luxurious. it's 20 pages. That's way enough time. I learned to do this in 6 panels that never change.
And that's partially why he's not running out of ideas, because he didn't have the luxury of
that's a good point
changing those panels. He had to really come up with new stories for that same set, visual language every time.
And it's a much more impressive version of like how we are confident about we can do our show. Right. Like, I'm not worried about not having things to say about it. Like, you were, no, it's going to happen. It's like that. It's just that what he does is valuable.
I do want to point out also Carlos Gomez on art, yes, and Jesus Obertov. Really, I think, is he a fill-in? This is the first issue he's done, Carlos Gomez?
I don't know the name, so maybe, but...
Yeah, I thought really good. I thought really good work. You know, cartoony, but there's some in a realistic way. I mean, it's very sort of classic Marvel superhero stuff, but you know, he has to do animals. He does a whole bit where they're all skeletons, which cannot have been fun to do, but
and then it's like really draw well. 60 his, or draw 60 Ramatots.
Yeah. His Ramatots, his Kang was really good. He's got to make these crazy ass guns that they develop. Like he's got a lot to do here. And he's doing fun, dynamic panel layouts and angles. I thought this was really good looking. If they wanted this guy to be the new ongoing, because it was not him before, it was, the name is escaping me right now, but it's not him. But if they wanted him to be the new ongoing artist, I'd be thrilled with that because he's terrific.
I think that, again, you'd mentioned Jesus Obertov. Color's perfect. The color is perfect. It's exactly the right kind of lightness and fun that this needs to be. This is not Batman. This is not Stormy. This is blue and yellow and green, you know, primary colors, not quite, but really good looking. And just because I don't want this to be a complete love fest, that fucking logo is terrible. That four is offensive.
Yeah.
Is that new?
It's been that way the whole series. The whole,
has it?
Ryan North.
Well, they haven't been in their costumes for the most part.
Oh, you mean the outfit, not the book logo?
No, no, not the book logo. The four on their chests.
The book logo is also bad. Yeah, that's the costume they've had for. I don't know if it's been the whole run because they haven't worn the costume a lot, but that's right. It's not good. Not good.
And the reason it's not good is because, and I'll be completely fair about this and my bias, because there's nothing wrong with it before. It was a four and a circle. Done. You know what's the only good change? And it can't last forever, nor should it. They are sticking with Johnny's mustache, hell or high water. And
that's true.
Like his personality in this book is informed by the mustache.
No, I think that, I mean, you know, people are sick of us talking about stuff like this, but for a book like the Fantastic Four, the cover logo and the costumes don't need to change. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I will say, and you'd mention the cover. Alex Ross is kicking ass lately.
Yeah.
He is, you know, for a long time in my mind, you know, he would do those pinup kind of things with a person standing there. But now, like, the covers are beautifully composed. They tell a little story. Mm-hmm. You know, they're each that sort of painted thing that he does. And they're amazing. Look at them.
Well, think about what his ethos is all about, you know, Silver Age comics, comic stylings, and the modern day version of covers is just pinup.
Yeah,
for the most part, there are people that don't do that, but his covers always tell you about the issue and always tell a story about the issue. Mm-hmm. It's not just a shot of an SF4 running at you; it's pinup. That makes sense.
And you're right. He's got an Indiana Jones in there, which should be annoying, but it works. Not, it shouldn't be annoying, but you know, like it could be hacky, and he made it work. In fact, it informs a little bit of what we're looking at.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen anything like this since Paul Dini on Detective.
Right. It's been a long time. 20 years.
And basically that. Fuck you. That. Was single issue stories, and they were Batman Detective. Maybe they were fantastic. Do you remember who drew that? That was a mean question.
No, I don't.
I thought maybe. It was probably more than. Well, anyway.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me.
No. I'm literally asking, do you remember? Because I can't picture it. And I don't remember a lot of the stories, but even that, which was super impressive and wasn't done a lot, wasn't as impressive as this because of the scope and the complication of the story. You can get away with a lot less in Batman if you want to. Right. You could, man. Right. I just thought Ryan North should go do Batman after this and do it like this. Holy shit, it'd be amazing. But this is perfect. It's
I don't know who did those issues. Now you've got me wondering.
Honestly, it's pick of the week. It was a great issue, and it was like
there
the
any
most fun
competition.
No, But yeah.
I mean, there was other good books this week. I'm not saying there weren't, but
there was one book, but it was just it was the combination of this being really good and be like, again? Like it keeping
Don Kramer.
Wow. I don't even know who that is.
I looked it up. He was one of the main guys. There's a bunch of people that did the art in that book, but Don Kramer was the main one, I think.
Yeah. Great issue. We're lucky to have this going on. I think it somewhere Dan Slott being like, I could have written the Fantastic Four forever. I was kind of bummed that I was off the book, but Ryan North's books are amazing. Like, I wouldn't want to take those away. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but it makes sense.
Yep.
Are you reading Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees?
No, this was a book that was pick of the week when I was not on the show. That was the week you and Paul talked about it.
This book is so fucking good. It's crazy. You should catch up. It's animals. It's anthropomorphic animals in a little town. Do you know anything about it? Did you listen to that show?
I did listen, but I don't remember much about it.
Basically, it's like small town, except everybody's an animal. And being animals doesn't really matter. Patrick Horvath, who we kind of looked up, but like he writes and draws and colors the entire thing. And it is... like we talked about before, and it's even more so as I look at the pages now, like I can't believe that somebody who I have never heard of can be this good at doing sequential art.
Hmm.
I mean, we've been doing this a long time. We usually see people come up through the ranks. Right. There's nowhere else. There's no,
it's like, the book, the image book,
the Petrolhead
car book.
But the difference with that is that those creators were working in a different market. And so they were doing work in, like, I understand when somebody comes from Europe or England, who, you know, really perfected their craft and got really good at it, you know, and then were brought into American comics. That makes sense. This person wasn't like came from nowhere. Like I don't know how you get good at it without doing the reps, and maybe he was, and nobody saw it. Doesn't make sense. So what we have here is there's a serial killer and she's a nice mom in the neighborhood.
Sure.
But every once in a while, she's got to let some steam off. She goes to the city and she kidnaps somebody and butchers them horribly. And then now there's another killer in the town. And this is sort of the aftermath of somebody being killed as we watch our protagonist, who is again a vicious serial killer, trying to find out who it is. And it's so well done. The crowd, if you told me what this story was, human or anthropomorphic animals, I don't want to read it. But it is good enough that this would have been the other book that could have been pick of the week. Mm-hmm. Again, not really for like this issue was amazing. It's just the next part of a story that is just so well done and interesting. And, you know, I give a lot of credit to getting to the end of an issue these days, you know, and being like, holy fuck, I want to read the next one. And these are spaced out. I don't know. I'm assuming they're monthly, but it feels like 5 to 6 weeks. And when they come out, I get really excited because it's like nothing else I am reading. And there's a great sort of left turn that happens in this story where you think, oh, they found the killer, and it's not. There's a whole other interesting story that happened with that character. It's sort of scratching the itch that I was feeling with, what was that other Boom book? This is IDW, but...
Wild's End.
Wild's End, exactly. And they're not really similar stories or anything, but it's a way of using animals to sort of using anthropomorphic animals in a comic book. And we've seen this a lot in European comics in America. It's a really...
goes back to Mouse. But I mean, goes further back to Mouse, but Mouse is the most famous version of it.
Right. It's a really quick way of indicating character. Mm-hmm. Like, just get a little bit of the fact of, like, the status of the character from that guy's a turtle. He's probably slow and old. And, you know, also the dog is happy. Happens in BoJack Horseman. It happens in the Scrooge McDuck comics from the 30s. Like, it exists. And it's beautiful. Like, it's like, really nicely detailed painted rich worlds, you know, in this little small town, but the colors are fantastic. They look like a watercolor thing. I don't know if they actually are. It's excellent. You should dig the issues out and read it. I think you'll enjoy it because it's good enough.
So we had the final issue of the first arc of Birds of Prey 6, Kelly Thompson,
six issues,
Leonardo Romero. Which made me even more annoyed that they had the one issue, because I guess it was five, where they had a fill-in artist, because I would have waited.
I noticed that, and I thought there must have been some sort of like emergency where I'm not going to finish, but right. I want to do the last issue of the arc.
I would have waited. Like,
yeah, it's not how published, you know.
I know, but like if you're going to sell the trade later, it's just going to be weird. Anyway, I just maybe.
I mean, I'm guessing it doesn't affect sales. If it did, then this wouldn't happen. But
so I would say that. I really liked reading this book. The mechanics of the story itself, I think I got less interested in as it went along. What they actually were doing, who the hell Sin is. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm kind of not interested in that. I liked the interplay of the characters and what was happening, and the action was really strong and fun. It was fun to read, even if I didn't necessarily really care what was happening by the end of it. Looking forward to more.
I gotta say, I was really impressed with the growth of Kelly Thompson as a writer to be able to do this kind of giant adventure and still keep the fun. And she did. I mean, listen, Captain Marvel was no slouch in it, but this is the next, you know, it's a team, it's a bunch of stuff going on. There was a lot of drama. I thought that the resolution to this story, I thought, was very well plotted. Mm-hmm. In that they couldn't save the person who needed saving, so it was an alternate solution. Mm-hmm. Which was both good and bad, and it's a gray sort of ending. And I thought that was good. Like, I can live with that. And then you're going to be stuck with some drama that you're going to have for a while. But then the sort of final kicker, Batgirl shows up and she's offended. Like, why wasn't I invited on this thing? And, you know, Dinah tries to play it off cool, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's this and this. And then you find out from... Who's this character? Meridian, who I don't know, who's some sort of time traveler, whatever. And we find out that in every possible timeline, Barbara dies.
On that mission, yeah.
On that mission. And also, like there's a real danger for her going forward. And I just thought, it was a really, really well done twist in that I was not seeing it coming. Right. It was a little bit from out of nowhere, and it gave the book legs that we didn't know were there. And then, you know, the last panel is we're going to need a new team. And I was like, awesome. You like switch people out. That's as long, you know, there's a couple of people in it. That's good. That's fine.
Yeah. The whole thing now is to protect Barbara Gordon. And so now you've got Dinah and you have Cassie, who I still think speaks too many words.
Sure.
Cut out half of her words.
I love her as a character, so I know what you're saying. I deal with it, though, because I like her. And I don't know why. I think it's just I love that initial run so much, and I like
No, she's a terrific character.
Yeah.
It's just like you could get by with her saying fewer words anyway. Mm-hmm. That's long gone. But I like the original Birds of Prey was basically Barbara Gordon and Black Canary. And who was the third one? Why can't I remember? Huntress. Yeah. And they would bring in and out other people, the Lady Blackhawk or Catwoman or whatever. So there's precedent to the Birds of Prey being fluid in terms of membership. Mm-hmm. But I like the idea that every mission has a different team depending on the mission's needs. So I'm looking forward to more. I thought for some reason this might have been the final issue of the book, just because my humbled brain thinks these things now. So I'm glad it wasn't. I'm glad we can continue on with more stories. So it was good.
I don't know that I've read a Birds of Prey book ever that mm-hmm. I stuck with. But, you know, I've given it issues here and there, but I enjoyed this. And you know, having Kelly Thompson be done with that really long Captain Marvel run was kind of a bummer. But then to follow that up immediately with this was really good. And, you know, she's doing her other stuff. She's doing her indie stuff. And that is of hit or miss with me.
Yeah, I think, the call ended this week too, which was kind of a mess.
But I'm a little more on the fence about it. Like, I kind of see what I don't know that it was executed in the end, but at least it was, I'm impressed by the range, basically. Mm-hmm. And I keep saying that, but, you know, we do this so often and for so long, and we watch creators come up. And so when they start to branch out and you see the sort of breadth of their talent, I'm so impressed by that I have to give it a lot of credit.
Right.
I mean, because good. So many people just do one thing, and a lot of people do one thing for a while, and then you see what they can do later when they feel, and then a lot of people try to do other things and they suck at it.
Yeah.
So
I'm speaking of sucking, I'm a sucker for the holiday anthology comic. I'm always reading them, always hoping they're gonna be great. They usually aren't, but every once in a while one works. And this week we had DC's How to Lose a Guy Gardner in 10 Days, which was their Valentine's Day special. And it was really good. It was. There was 1, 2, 3, 4, 8 stories. Only one wasn't that good. The rest were really fun. There was one really terrific Constantine story.
I started it. I didn't have time to finish it, but I read the first two and change. Mm-hmm. And both of those first two stories, especially the second one, the Red Tornado story, I thought were delightful. They were all delightful.
The Booster Gold one, which is the third one, which you didn't get to, was mm-hmm. my least favorite. But the Guy Gardner one, where he's going on dates with Vicky Vale, was, I thought, really kind of sweet. The Red Tornado one was really, really, really fun.
Smart.
Booster Gold, it was fine. The Flash, where he's basically on this first date with Iris, but he keeps running back in time to fix mistakes he makes.
I did finish the Booster Gold one, but I didn't remember it.
Yeah, it was mostly unforgettable. But anyway, forgettable. The Flash one where he's on a first date with Iris, but he keeps going back in time to fix little mistakes until he realizes he can't just let it be, was good. The Constantine one, I won't even spoil, but mm-hmm. really sweet in a way I wasn't expecting, and then really touching at the end. Plastic Man was fun. Dennis Hopeless wrote that one. I guess he's back to being Dennis Hopeless.
Hallam didn't have the same ring.
It didn't, and that was a really funny and fun one. Great art from Baldemar Rivas. Wonder Woman was good, and then the Nightwing and Batgirl on date night story was fun. This was like a really fun, sweet special. I was about halfway through. I was like, is this really good? And it was really good.
These are going to be a lot more fun and interesting necessarily than say like. To me, than the Halloween one, than the like trying to put them all in horror movies or whatever, the Christmas story.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard not to like these sweet romance stories because that is always been a part of the superhero world. You know,
yeah, they're soap operas and romance is a big part of it. So the romance stories are more fun than, you know, someone's arm getting chopped off.
Well, that you get to see the guys the folks happy,
yeah.
You know, and we don't. You know, so much of what their stories are struggles or whatever, and so it's a nice respite, you know, from that sort of constant battle or whatever.
So definitely, Josh, as a Constantine fan, check out that one. I will say this is a minor criticism.
It's not a real Constantine story unless the person is dead at the end because John loved them. So
well, you'll have to read the story and tell me what you think. The only sort of criticism I'll give. And this is not really directed at the book itself or even the artist, but it's just a sort of widespread problem. Leonardo Rodriguez is the artist on the Nightwing Batgirl story. And ever since the Tom Taylor Nightwing run, they've been really cognizant of giving her freckles. And usually that's done in the coloring, but every once in a while, the artist draws these blotches on her face, and it just looks like her face is dirty. Or she's got very strange tattoos. Like in this issue, he's very persistent on drawing these, you know, these little tiny, these circles that are way too big, first of all, to be freckles. And it's just like, let the colorist do it. I mean, you just look like she's got dirt on her face now. And it's very pronounced in this story. But otherwise, it was a good story. And he's a good artist. It just was that's a philosophical problem. Anyway, that was fun.
One of my favorite Married with Children jokes of all time is that, like, Bud was trying to grow a mustache. And I think either the dad or Kelly said, what's the matter? The older boy's been rubbing your face in the dirt. And I think of it all the time. And I can't wait for my kids to start trying to grow facial hair.
I don't know if Al Bundy should be your model.
That show is fantastic.
The show was great. I'm just saying, as a model of dadhood, perhaps.
No.
Perhaps Al's not the way.
I don't follow it, except I do try to take a lot from his character in Dutch.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
His name I don't remember. Wait, he's Dutch. He had a real name, but
there you go. Not addled at all.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So this week on the shipping list, I saw Dark Spaces Dungeon number 3, and I went, fuck! I missed two. Two came out during the holiday break. So I went back and I read 2 and 3 this week.
Do you know why? Because the names on that make you think it's a Dungeons and Dragons book.
I just didn't see it during the holiday break. Things.
Yeah, I hear
you. Priorities. But I really like, you know, we liked the first one. We talked about it on the show.
This book is so good. I get, this is my favorite Scott Snyder book in a really long time. This is the same team that did the one, was it Wildfire? It was about the forest fire, which was a fine book.
Something like that.
But but this is, I mentioned it before, like I get to the end of it and I was like, I need to know what's happening next. It is so well thought out. And Scott Snyder has managed to shake the overwriting that I believe he has been guilty of in the past. And it is moving, and it's great, horrible ideas. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like it's a horror book. Like it's really
it's a horror book, but it's almost more of a crime thriller than a horror book.
But there's an element of like outfit torture in there.
Yeah. I mean, it is, but it's not any worse to see on like CBS or something.
Sure. But you know, either way, I mean, like this could be, like on an SBU, and it would be terrible, right, but it's much better here. This story, I'm riveted, very much so.
Yeah, I think this has been good. This is the story about an FBI agent who was abducted as a kid by a serial killer. He had managed to escape, and now the killer has returned, and there's a family being tormented. That he's, I mean, it's ridiculous. He's teaming up with the tech dad, the tech CEO dad, but still excited.
I am just waiting for the twist, and I think it's going to, like, I don't know what it's going to be, but it has to be something,
right?
Because there's no way you don't have that. In this, we had the extremely original concept of the boss saying, you're off the case, you're out of control, you're too close to it. And I was like, you know what? It's cliched, but it goddamn works. You'd never take the guy off the case. He knows more about it than anybody, but you wouldn't have him on it any either. It doesn't matter. I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring up The Space Between number 4. This is the last issue of this little mini series by Karina Becko with art by Danny Luckert. The first issue was my pick of the week. Connor did not like it.
I did not like it.
I actually really did enjoy it. And the thing that was most impressive to me is literally how much ground was covered over the space of 4 issues. They were paced in such a way that was much faster than I think we normally do in comics. And it was like trying to get through a lot of plot, and each issue was further in the future. And so we didn't even have the same characters each time. But there was sort of a larger concept going on that really crystallized in the end about, you know, like they go, basically they're on this spaceship, you know, they're trying to get to another system because they left Earth, and you know, it's been hundreds of years and the spaceship is falling apart, and they come into view of this, you know, the last issue was like they had to course correct, and nobody wanted them to do it, but two heroes sacrificed themselves to course correct, you know, and this is them, they come into view of the world, and everybody on the ship is like, we don't want to get off. And the people are like, no, we're going to die on here. There's no way we get another generation in. And so two more people have to, you know, do some heroic thing to make sure that they land on the thing. And it ends in, you know, hopefulness. They're bound this new planet, which they're going to fuck up too. I really think craft wise and structurally, it was a hell of a lot of work. And I think it was done really well.
Well, this episode is all about final issues. This is Captain America 756 or number 6, the final issue of this arc. J. Michael Straczynski, fill-in artist Lan Medina. And, you know, I really liked this arc. We've talked about it a couple times. It is hokey. It's very JMS-y, but it kind of works. And even if he can't help himself and he throws a little retcon in here, where we find out that back in the 30s when Steve Rogers helps Meyer Lansky break up the Nazi plot, the Nazi boon, the Boone's plot to blow up Madison Square Garden, Steve gets beat up so badly that he's going to die. And luckily, the super soldier serum saves him. So he would have eventually died if he hadn't gotten that super soldier serum just from the beating he took.
I don't like that. I absolutely don't like that.
Yeah, that's the impulse he always has to throw something like that in.
Make his mark.
But I liked it otherwise. And even if the ending was heavy-handed, I thought it was heavy-handed in a good way because these are things that are happening now in the present day. Steve's buddy who he helped him restore the building. He's a nice Korean. He's Korean, right? He's Korean.
Yeah.
Nice Korean family. Steve's going to give him rent-free living if he could, basically be his stand-in whenever he's off being Captain America at the building. And he's like, nah, we're moving somewhere else. We're out of here. And Steve doesn't get it until someone else tells him it's because down the street there's a whole bunch of swastikas painted on the wall and foreigners get out. America for Americans. And it's heavy-handed and it's hokey, but it's true to life, unfortunately, what's happening now. And so I thought it worked, and Steve painting over it, again, hokey and heavy-handed, and the final panel was terrible, but
I understand what you're saying, and I think that like it touched you in the right spots, and it was like, regardless of everything, it still made me feel the way I did. I didn't love it. I don't think it was terrible. I actually thought – I don't know that I would have – I thought it was sort of JMS light in a certain way. I think there was a lot of things that because you can go patriotic with Captain America. It's what he's there for.
You should, yeah.
And you know, idealism and all those things. But the current the present day story, like whatever
not
the
as good.
Demon today, it was not as good. It was completely uninteresting.
I thought interested in Steve fighting demons. I don't know why. Just no. Not.
Yeah.
And you and I talked offline about Sharon's skull mask. How that is.
It hadn't occurred to me. First, I saw the close up of her skull mask, and I realized it was a skull. I don't think I put that together before. And it has weird, like there's like lower jaw teeth coming around her chin, and then there's some around her cheek. And that's when it occurred to me. I was like, wait, she's not going to wear any kind of skull iconography anywhere. It's not happening, and it's terrible. It's genuinely, and I know that like every once in a while a costume, I just said that about the Fantastic Four. That's a whole different level of I was just like, I was kind of like, I don't really like it because it's not the same as
it's
the
kind
old
of
thing.
Offensive because
but this is terrible.
Who Cap fights. It'd be like if, let's just say Catwoman started wearing like white face paint and red lips,
right.
And or, like dyeing hair green. It's like, wait,
Yeah. It's a bad direction. It's like it's up there with Nick Fury as the Unseen. Just whoa.
I'm still really enjoying Crave from Maria Lovett. She does everything in the book, and it's this strange sexual thriller, techno thriller that reminds me a little bit of like I guess movies we would have seen 30 years ago.
I was going to say, as a sort of cool indie comic, this works. If this was a movie, I would feel like a scumbag watching it.
Well, it depends on what. Is it late night, Saturday night?
Yeah.
when you're 19, maybe. I just think it's funny. So the whole story of Crave is that this app is letting you, it says, what do you crave? And since they're all in college, they all crave sex with people in that they know from class or whatever. And so
because if you're 50 it's a nap. It's gonna still be what do you crave?
Quiet and a nap. And so it's sexual chaos on campus, and that's one of my favorite parts about it. Every time anybody goes into a hallway, it's just like people banging against the wall or making out or the other kind of sex acts happening. It's just like it's sexual chaos, and it's 100% what would happen when at the time of your life when everyone's bursting with hormones and can't handle it. This app causing trouble,
and just like real life, it's not ending well.
No,
like
it's all messy.
It's not going to be good.
My only criticism is we're at issue 3, and I believe it's a 6-issue miniseries. It's definitely a miniseries. I don't know how many it is, but I feel like the story should be further along now.
I can't tell the characters apart.
We're starting to move. Like the story's starting to move a little bit, but for up until now, it's mostly just been shenanigans.
Like every once in a while,
coming together.
Like every once in a while, somebody will do something. And I'll go, oh, that's that guy.
Right.
But besides that, like, I don't know who I'm looking at. They're not really defined. Like, I know there's like the one nerd guy and his friend left a phone message that was like, don't use it. Those are the only two. And then there's
he left. He left a sticky note, which is always the best way to give really important information. Is don't use the whatever you do. Don't use the Crave app. Too late. Right. Everyone's doing it. Everyone's banging. It's a 6-issue miniseries, so we're halfway through. So the story really needs to start moving. That's my only criticism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But otherwise, I like it. I think her art is really interesting. At first, I wasn't sure how I felt about how she drew embarrassment or arousal. These mm-hmm. like red splot, just yeah. like the lines across the face. But I kind of like it.
It's a very good shorthand, I think, in that yeah. way. And again, this is another one. Now, I don't know where she's from, but obviously there's a lot of talent there.
Right.
People can do mini comics. What was I talking about earlier? Who was the artist? Oh, Patrick Horvath.
Yeah.
Now, again, I looked him up because I was – and like there's not like a long web – he did some kind of comic before this, but it was short. You know, Maria Lovett, for all I know, could be you're doing a web comic for years and hone the craft that way or right. doing books in Brazil. I don't know. But sort of the same thing. Like, geez, where are these people coming from? You know, to be
I'm
able
glad.
To
– I'm glad because you're always yes. worried that, you know, with an aging reading population, will there even be newer creators coming in? Because so many of the creators that we read – we talked about this in the last show, you weren't on, but so many of the creators we read are from, I've been doing it for 20, 30 years, and there's not yeah. a lot of new blood. So it's good to see it.
And also the art form isn't necessarily something that attracts younger people who want to do something. You have
at least the sort of standard Wednesday superhero stuff, which is fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I'm enjoying this book. Only because it's just a totally different genre and kind of story we normally get from, mm-hmm. yeah. from Image. So
this
I'm
really, should be coming out from Image.
Yeah. So there you go. Those are the books we're going to talk about. It was a big week. But at patreon.com/iFanboy, every patron of iFanboy gets to vote to add the book to the rundown. And this week, it was a squeaker. It was a one-vote win for Ultimate Black Panther number one from Brian Hill, Stefano Caselli, David Curiel, and Corey Pettit. And that is the second patron pick for Ultimate Comics. So we had Ultimate Spider-Man was a patron pick, now Ultimate Black Panther. Will Ultimate X-Men... completely trifecta when it comes out. We'll find out.
They're
tune in.
Definitely going to vote for Ultimate X-Men.
So we'll no see. It was close. It was one mind. Vote. One vote beat Thundercats. So we could have had to read Thundercats, Josh. So,
well, yeah, and then people are probably disappointed. Like you still could read Thundercats. Nope.
I loved Thundercats as a kid. That book does not look like fun.
Declan Shalvey anyway. Wrote it.
Yeah, well,
he also he didn't writes draw it. Alien.
So, Ultimate Black Panther. So Brian Hill's an artist we both are a writer we both really like. You interviewed him for Talksplode.
Yeah.
He does a lot of TV work, a lot of Hollywood stuff. He did some terrific comics for a while. He blew up on the scene, retreated back to TV. I think that one Vertigo book was too much for him and emotionally. He came back. He did a book, it's one of the smaller publishers not too long ago, like a heist book. I read one issue of
He's on Blade now.
Yeah, he's doing Blade. Now he's doing Black Panther. He's back in a big way, I think, which is good. I think the comics world is better with Brian Hill in it.
Yes.
Because I'm always enjoy his work. That being said, this was okay. Like, it was – I liked it. I certainly liked it enough to keep reading it. But I didn't really get a – there wasn't, like, a lot different about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
again, I was thinking
my
that,
point
too.
Of what's the point of all this? Like – Ultimate Spider-Man, yeah. pretty big difference. Here, the difference is that, what is the difference really?
My so there, Wakandan politics is that like I know the movie better than any of them, and I've read some of the series, and they're all kind of variations. And so I was like, this is another slight variation. But I feel like every time a new Black Panther book comes out, even
it's
just
always
the
different.
Yeah, so everybody's doing this all the time. This would just be a new regular arc of it,
right? It wasn't different enough, and I'm trying to remember the difference. I just read this. I'm trying to remember the differences. It's like there's a whole Khonshu and Ra thing where, again, in this ultimate world, the villains are secretly running everything, and there's no superheroes, even though there's Black Panther.
So they say the villains are secretly running things, and I was looking for it in here, and I was like, I don't see that.
Right.
I don't understand why
Khonshu
that's
and Ra
there.
Being invoked because apparently they run – those two gods run Africa. And so the Moon Knights, the Moon Knight army is the bad guy here.
The Moon's Knight.
The Moon's Knight. And then there's definitely a hint that Storm is Warmonger's partner, Killmonger's partner. But other than that, it's not super different. his father gets blown up in a terrorist attack, bombing attack, just like in the movies.
Yeah.
But that being said, I liked it. I think Stefano Caselli is terrific. Great, yes. Superhero Marvel style artist. I love the colors from David Curiel. It's a good looking book. And the characterization, like, I liked it. But like you said, this could have been regular Black Panther and I would have blinked an eye. Really.
Yeah. I wanted to like it and I kind of didn't. I was ambivalent, really.
Hmm.
I'm enjoying Blade to a certain extent.
Hmm.
More than this. I don't get into Black Panther comics. You know, I really enjoyed the movie and I've liked him as a character a lot. In other things, but as we get into sort of the Wakandan politics, like, so far nothing I've read has been better than the movie at doing it, and so it feels a little pointless.
Well, what you said really resonated with me was that this feels like every new incarnation of the regular book, where it's this time he's not the king, and this time this happened, and here he's married to Okoye.
Oh, here it's the future, and he's, you know.
So you're totally right. Like, I was reading it going, this doesn't feel that different than the Marvel book, but and some characters are just better for certain readers as just a spice. Like, I like Ghost Rider when it shows up in the story. I don't really like reading Ghost Rider comics, you know? Mm-hmm. And Black Panther, I always usually give it a shot. I don't think I gave the last arc a shot because I gave like three or four reboots a shot. And after a while, I just sort of
There's something where this is true of Wonder Woman also, is that writers keep trying to go into the character's culture.
Mm.
And there's often when there's a god or deity involved, they just can't get it. And it's like, I don't like who's the Black Panther, like, it is a Black Panther, but who's their, like, their god? Like, there's Khonshu, and then there's... I can't remember, but there is one. There's the spirit of whatever.
It's just the spirit of the Black Panther, I thought.
Bast, I think it is.
Bast, is that it, really?
Yeah, I think so. But either way, in all of those comics, and this is related to like, you know, Hawkman, they can't quite get it right. The characters, to me, tend to be more interesting in the world, in the greater world that they're interacting with. When you take them back to just their space, it's just not interesting to me often, or it's not well done enough. And it's the same. Mm. You take Wonder Woman and you put her on Paradise Island and you deal with that history and the Greek gods. And like, it's just been done. Repetitive.
It's just
And everybody keeps trying to, because it's never been great, and everybody keeps trying to do it again. And I was like, just don't do it anymore. It doesn't work. Nobody's been able to crack that code.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not super interested in reading, like, court, the problems at court. You know, it's like, let Black Panther punch a dude.
Yeah.
You know, and let Wonder Woman kick a dude. Like, that tends to be what I'm interested in. And it's like,
well, the thing that
I did think this was bad. And I think his sister, Shuri, being sort of more militantly warlike was interesting. Like, there's certainly things here. I'm going to keep reading it. Spoiler alert. But I didn't love it. I didn't even like it as much as I like Spider-Man one, the Ultimate Spider-Man number one. But the art was really strong, and we'll see. Again, it's just not much different here than – it's like 90%, maybe 95% the Marvel Universe Black Panther.
Yeah.
And so what are we doing?
I mean the other thing is that – kind of the way that this is sold to me is that it was kind of supposed to be cohesive and none of them have anything to do with each other so far. And that, you know, that's me. I have to be patient. I have to get through it or whatever, but I would like a little more to make it. And as I'm very interested to see what this very non-orthodox X-Men book is going to be like.
Right.
But I don't have high hopes.
Josh, I almost started singing there, and no one wanted it, so that's why I didn't. So
high apple pie in the sky hopes.
Ultimate Black Panther number one from Marvel Comics and the Ultimate Universe line, I guess, and ratings on that book. Ratings out of 5, I'm going to give it a 3.25.
3.
Are you going to read more? Straight up three. Are you sticking with it?
I'm going to read more because I am such a fan of him as a writer that I give him a lot of slack, and I missed him when he stopped writing comics. But I didn't love it.
It was I thought it was solid, but I didn't think it was great. Ultimate Black Panther number one was a patron pick. Patreon.com/iFanboy is how you can vote. And every patron gets a vote to add the book to the rundown. We're running long, so I'm just going to, you know, bookshop.org is our partner. iFanboy.com/Amazon is where you can find your general link for shopping. If you're doing any Valentine's Day shopping or anything like that, you can do it at Amazon. iFanboy.com/Amazon. iFanboy.com/support is our digital PayPal tip jar. iFanboy.threadless.com is our t-shirt store. But patreon.com/iFanboy, it's our biggest way you can support the show. It helps keep the show going, helps pay the bills. It helps make this time away from our families worth it, and it helps pay for comics we need to read. It helps make this engine go. It's the oil. It's the fire. You're the guy in the front car shoveling coal into the engine. That's who you are, patrons.
In this metaphor, though, if you are burning oil, that's not a good thing.
Right. Don't burn the oil, but shovel the coal into the engine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I do want to mention that after people have asked us, we've implemented a yearly membership option on Patreon. So if you don't want to be a monthly member, if you just want to get it all done in one go, you can do that. And if you do that, you get a 10% discount. So if you want to convert to month to yearly membership, you can go patreon.com/iFanboy. You can do that. And again, you'll get a 10% discount on that. And we thank everyone who's a patron. If you're not one, you consider being one today. It helps the show. And it's fun. You get to hang out with us. It's enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
At the $5 or higher level, if you're a patron, you get a superpower live on the show. Like this gentleman who's been waiting a long time because, as I told him just the other day, we accidentally checked the wrong box on his name as already having received the power. He didn't. He's been waiting patiently for years for this power. And so we apologize. So Josh, give him a good one.
I was under the impression that it was your turn to give him a power.
It says Jay next to his name.
That it seems as if this person is the gift, the victim of many typographical many problems. Yeah, many oversights. And you would think that in my moment right now, you know what? I think he's lucky to get one of these scrambling ones. And you'd think I would tie that to his like ability to avoid red tape and stuff. I'm not going to do that.
He's a man who's probably dealt with a lot of red tape in his life, and now he's getting it from his I wouldn't say favorite podcast, but maybe it is.
I think it's fair to say, though. Least it was before.
He's getting the runaround from his favorite, and maybe you're even his favorite host, Josh, and you're getting in the runaround.
Yeah, well, Douglas Edwards is the alarm raiser.
Okay.
He raises the alarm. It's different than the whistleblower.
Okay.
But he sees when trouble is coming.
Oh.
And he raises the alarm.
And people listen to him?
He's trustworthy. He's, you know, that's when people know, whoa, if he's saying this, then we better get on it. Now he
senses trouble. He's like almost like a human spider sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he raises the alarm.
Does an actual alarm? Does it go wee wee wee?
I considered it, but as I'm trying to say it, it doesn't feel right to me. So I want to say he has various dependable methods to raise the alarm, whether it's carrying around a bell on a handle.
he's got a whistle.
There's definitely available klaxon.
He's got a penny whistle.
Yeah. No. See, that would be bad because people would be like, and he'd be like, no, this is bad. He raises the alarm. Wherever needed, he's in the right place. You people need to go.
It's never a false alarm.
Never, never.
Never a false alarm.
No, you can trust it. It's the alarm raiser.
Douglas Edwards, thanks for being a patron. Patreon.com/iFanboy. And Josh, I think we have time for one of these, depending on how fast we go.
So, I mean, you could do the second one pretty easy.
All right, I'll read it. Queely writes and says, I've been thinking about this for about 3 years since I saw the first car with one. Do the glowing car emblems piss Josh off as much as the glowing Spider-Man symbol on his costume? Question. And that's you'll have to explain to me what he's talking about, because I don't know what he's talking about.
All right. Well, as car, you remember the Spider-Man, obviously.
I know what he's talking about for that. I don't know what a glowing car emblem is.
So as we quote unquote improve our car technology, one of the things that's happened is that car manufacturers have tried to find a way to make things stand out a little more. And so like they put a little light LED like sort of around or under the car logo. The
How emblem. Have I not seen this? I live in Los Angeles. This is car culture USA. I don't know.
I've definitely seen versions of it, but I also relate it closely to people trying to be tricky and clever with their taillights and signal indicators. Where it's a little animated.
I just Googled these. These are terrible.
It's terrible. And it's not like the Spider-Man one is offensive in the sense that like you're fucking with a design that needs no fucking with in a dumb way.
Right.
Anything on the car, especially in the dark, that is doing something it's not supposed to is I think dangerous.
These seem like mods, not something you'd get from the manufacturer over my
Well, ride. Anybody, I don't know, is it still a thing that people do like the glowing LED light under the car? Is there still, that must still exist in Los Angeles.
I haven't seen that, honestly.
Car culture was such a big thing. But what really bothers me is like when the rear light, the turn signal, like does a little animated thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like it sweeps, like sweeps to the right. That.
Yeah.
Yeah, or some, and then when they do that though, then if they're turning right, then the left one shuts off. Don't do that. That's confusing and weird. Lights are weird
when you're driving. You're just trained to follow certain kind of lights right. A certain way, and then they change it too much. It gets dangerous
because you need to rely on your instincts when you're driving for the most part. Because you've got text to send, you've got the radio. Like
you've got to do anything but drive.
Exactly. Honestly, for most people, I was like, just don't fucking confuse them. And bright flashing lights and shiny things that aren't shiny are a great way to confuse people in the dark. It's not safe.
You don't notice these glowing logos because you're too busy, you know, watching your phone, watching TikTok while you're driving.
Right.
So,
that's a big fucking screen on most cars. I have a little tiny
screen.
Who
even looks at the road anymore?
How are you? You know what? There's an ad. I forget what it's called. Like it's Power Cruise. There is on a truck, and it's a giant full size truck that has no hands free steering or whatever. And does your Tesla have hands free steering?
I don't have the package. I didn't buy the fake driving package.
I am such an old person when it comes to cars. And I know like that's a joke we make all the time, but like I am extremely conservative when it comes to vehicles. And the idea of not putting your hands on the wheel bothers me to no end because I don't trust people and I don't trust technology. And like, you know, all it takes is one thing. But in this commercial, they're like, you can tow with no hands. And they show him in a full-size truck with a boat behind it. And he's like on a seaside cliff. Not touching the wheel. And I was like, I don't have that kind of confidence in anything.
Yeah. No. I'm constantly looking over, and we need to move on, but I'm constantly looking over in traffic and or at the light and seeing people on their phones and just marveling that there's not 10,000 people a day dead on the road.
So
which I think we're developing like a sixth sense as humanity. We're evolving because otherwise I don't understand how we're not dying constantly.
It makes me so angry. Angry. And I remember like in New Hampshire, who doesn't have a seatbelt law. I mean, famously, they passed a no cell phone law. And it occurs to me, I was like, oh, this law has never been and never will be enforced in any way.
Right, right.
And there's not I had it and it was gone. Oh, I know what it was. I used to live in Los Angeles. Famously, terrible traffic all the time. But this was before smartphones. Mm-hmm. And I had somebody sort of point out to me once, they were like, imagine that you're at a light, right? You're all backed up, and then there's somebody in the front, and they're looking down at their phone, and you lose a second before the light changes. No one in New York is going to let this happen, by the way. But in Los Angeles, imagine that effect being multiplied a million times every day. And I just thought, oh.
Do you know how often I'm shouting at the windshield because I'm at a left turn signal, and if we all go right away, we could make it, but no, the fourth car hasn't moved because they're on their fucking phone, and now we're not making it?
I can't imagine.
I feel like that's a legally justified killing. That might be an overreaction, but I feel like it should be. Let's talk from let's change drastically to Bearded Comic Row from Columbus, Ohio.
I really didn't think that was going to go on for that long. And
I've been thinking of this question ever since Scott wrote in and said his pet peeve is people calling trade paperbacks graphic novels. It got me thinking that I have a lot of graphic novels. How do you organize all your books? Alphabetically, by character, by publisher, or a variation of different ways? I think, Josh, you're a variation of different ways, aren't you?
Yeah, there's no system at all.
You just stack things randomly.
I do now because I'm out of space. But I mean, no, but like my...
Your movies used to be like that.
When my movies house, were like that, but there was DVDs a system. Random. They weren't random. They were grouped by director.
Grouped by feelings.
No, it was by director. Like literally, like they were grouped by filmmaker. And the other I'll thing was
it.
Like...
I will allow it.
I knew where they were. It wasn't at a point where I couldn't tell. However, eventually it got big enough that I did rearrange. My DVDs are, and like they're in a huge shelf downstairs, just gathering dust, are alphabetical. My Blu-rays aren't.
What was the impetus?
I don't remember. I think I was just like I had ADHD, like a hyper-focus moment. And I was like, well, I'm going to do this now because I was probably supposed to be doing
How would you shelve Grindhouse in the old system?
Well, it would have been with Quentin Tarantino because that would have been the only reason I had it. And I didn't have a Robert Rodriguez book, so I would have put that. I had my records were in the sort of same way, but eventually I alphabetized the records.
It's just so hard to find things if it's not alphabetical quickly.
It's true.
Before other people find things.
My books are scattered kind of in various areas throughout my house, and they're mostly grouped by creator. And they're sort of around, you know, like you know, there's a bunch of Vertigo books together. Right. So the Alan Moore books, and then right around in that area is, you know, Hellblazer and, you know, Preacher, whatever it is. So that's kind of, they're grouped like that. And then obviously, because the way that my shelves are shaped, like the Absolutes can't be with them. So they're off on another side.
Right.
Again, I kind of know where they are, but I don't really have to. I don't know. I'm not going to alphabetize them because the sizing is a big problem with that too.
Yeah, like I have
little Oni books are together.
Right. I have books in several places, so it really depends on which shelf you're talking about. Like the shelves in my office that you can see in the background of like our hangouts or our live shows, those are like the Absolutes and things that, so they're all by format. And then I have like a shelf of Star Wars books, and I have a shelf of like, these are the things Connor likes, like a book about the Yankees and a book about Indiana Jones and a book about the Beatles. But then, and then downstairs, I've got a Darwin Cook shelf of all the Darwin Cook collections I've got.
Yeah.
On my downstairs cabinet that's on display. But then, like, my main bookcase, I have sort of my form. Well, it starts off by formats, like all the apps, all the omnibuses, are on the bottom shelf, sort of as a weight anchor. So those are all together, but they're in alphabetical. And then the rest of the trades that are above those are all alphabetical by title. However, it is slightly broken in that I have all the Brubaker and Phillips Reckless books under R together, even though they'll have different titles. I just have them all together under R. But everything else is just alphabetical. So I'd never find anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it is.
Some things will never change.
Yeah. Thanks for writing in, Bearded Comic Bro and Queely. Contact@fanboy.com is how you can write in. And we got a bunch of Mediasplode emails in the past week. Thanks for writing those in. If you want to write in Mediasplode email, contact@fanboy.com, put Mediasplode in the subject line. And whenever we need the time, we use those on the show or we wait for the mailbag. But some good ones. I'm looking forward to answering some of those. Let's plug some shows and get out of here. We had the Animation Brain Trust review of Justice League Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 1. We had that last week. Listen to Paul, Ryan, and I talk about that. The first of three parts, apparently. And before that, we had our Booksplode review of Classic G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, Volume 1. Josh and I reviewed that book. And I'm on Volume 3 at the moment.
Yeah, you got ahead of me. I definitely lost steam.
You know what happened this week?
Hmm.
I literally got up to Snake Eyes' Origin Part 1, and I had to read these fucking books this week. I was like, new comics.
I really do have to say I'm not behind because of a lack of interest. I'm not bored.
No. It's been great. I was reading one a night and then I had to stop to read these books, which has made me sad because I got to the point I was excited to get to. But one thing I do want to say, since we didn't get to talk about G.I. Joe yet, and we're doing it now, is that there's a very clear leveling up every 10 issues of the series. So the first trade, we talked about it. It's important, foundational, but it's still not quite sure what it is. Issue 10 starts the ongoing saga of the story. But the second trade, which is that part, it's super fun. The art's kind of a little bit wonky at times. The third trade starts off with the silent issue with Steve LaHola on art. And then you have a Russ Heath issue. And then Steve Lea Aloha is his name, does the origin issues. The art's much better in the third trade. the stories are much better as a result. You can see sort of every 10 inches gets better and better. Hmm. That's my observation so far reading it.
Interesting.
I actually gave my wife the silent issue. She's never read an issue of G.I. Joe. I was like, read this. She liked it.
That's a classic.
And then next, coming up, we have our Media Explode coming out this coming week. I think we're going to rank the best picture nominees. That's our usual show for that. And then Josh will have a Talk Explode at the end of the month, hopefully. We'll see.
Yeah, working on it.
Sometimes things don't go as planned.
Listen, don't write it off yet. We're good. I'm working on it. I haven't forgotten. It's not like the 15th and I haven't started yet. Although hey. It will be close to that by the time you listen to this. Plus, it's a leap year month, so I got extra time.
Don't write yourself off yet, Josh.
Doesn't matter if you feel left out or looked down on. You can find our library over 1,300 shows and counting, probably close to 1,400 at ifanboy.com or wherever podcasts are sold. And I think that's an interesting choice of word because they're given. Most of them, they're given. Yeah. You can follow us at ifanboycomics on Instagram to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. And sometimes for the best of the week in panels, it's not a promise. The best of the week in panels isn't a promise. It's a bonus. That's how you have to look at it. You can follow us on Instagram at C.S. Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan should you desire such a thing.
And finally, subscribe to this show on youtube.com/ifanboy. We post this show every week and also our old video shows are there. So you can find lots of embarrassing things that happened back in 2007, 8, 9, 10, up to 12, I think. That's as far as we went. 13, around there. Younger, not as wise, more pliable and limber.
Fitter. I don't know about that.
You know.
I don't think I've ever been limber. That's the thing that I've learned about myself.
Those are all there. YouTube.com/iFanboy. You can subscribe there. Thank you very much for doing that. Also, consider leaving a review or a star rating. Apple Podcasts. That's how most people listen to the show. Spotify. That's the second most way people listen to the show. And then all the other ones. You can leave a review, star rating. We appreciate that. Thank you very much. That's it for this week's show. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.